Hi, all. These are generally conversations between adults after the children have left the table. The language can be spicy, and the subjects can get saucy. So if you're ready, this is the Southern Fork. Unscripted kitchen chats, and also studio chats, with some of the most interesting voices in the culinary South. I'm Stephanie Burt, a food and beverage writer based in Charleston, South Carolina, who travels with her fork to write for a variety of publications, from magazines you might have on your coffee table to the website you love to visit for your favorite recipes. And I'm inviting you to come behind the scenes with me to get to know the people who make this Southern culinary landscape so special. I'm always hungry for the next bite, thirsty for that next sip, and ready for the next conversation. Let's dig in. The Southern Fork is presented this year by Townsend Automotive in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. The Honda CR-V has been my favorite vehicle in Honda's lineup for years because it has great gas mileage and can haul a vintage furniture find with ease. In fact, it's so easy for getting out there in general, from the beach to the mountains to even the next photo shoot for a Southern travel article. Purchasing a CR-V from Townsend Honda means purchasing from a family-owned company built on service and connection with its customers, and they want to remind you of the joys of a jaunt down the road. Visit TownsendHonda.com for current inventory, or if you're in West Alabama, stop in. Townsend Honda salutes local entrepreneurs from restaurateurs to podcasters, and they welcome you to be part of a community that does the same. In times like these, it's good to go back to the garden. And with school back in session, that's exactly where some children in Birmingham, Alabama are headed. Jones Valley Teaching Farm is located in the city's downtown. And its patchwork of small urban farms within a single community is reshaping the stories and futures for those nearby. Amanda Story is the executive director of the farm, where she's been an enthusiastic advocate, volunteer, and employee for 10 years, four of which have been spent in her current role. Her passion for the connection between food and community began in her early career, and like me, she sees food through the lens of the people it touches. In a place where weeds once grew in abandoned lots, Jones Valley Teaching Farm is growing hope and imagination for a different future. Welcome to the Southern Fork.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for keeping this place open until it took me 8 years to get here. Thanks for that. I'm so excited to be sitting on the new and improved campus of Jones Valley Teaching Farm. Actually, one of the campuses.
One. We have seven total campuses in Birmingham, Alabama.
And that is a total of how many acres?
So, you're catching me. So the downtown is three, our high school one is two, and all the others are one, about one. Yeah. So what is that? Like 10?
That's 10 acres of land that would not be being farmed.
That's right.
Within the city. And you do so much here. We're going to have to parcel out, and I'm going to have to ask some questions that it sounds like I didn't Google anything, but there's so many pieces and parts to this. Before we even get to there, I would love for you to distill the why. The why is how the world of Jones Valley Teaching Farm was built. It started from that, and it sticks with that idea. Yeah.
So the why, I think, you know, I'm the third executive director in the history of Jones Valley Teaching Farm. It started back in 2002. And I think the why has always been at the foundation of the why has always been the same. No matter what or how we evolved, it's always been the same. And it's this idea that, you know, food and powerful, I always say the powerful or transformational act of growing food, cooking food, sharing food, giving food, those very basic survival tenets of who we are as people, right? We have to do that and we don't have a choice. But that it can also be a catalyst for community change in many different ways. And throughout Jones Valley's history, it has represented different pieces of that, right? So when we first started, it was like, let's take a plot of land in the middle of Birmingham, Alabama, an urban city.
And I don't mean the middle, like on near the Target. We're like at the freeway downtown, like,
yeah.
Downtown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of it, right? It's like, how do you take this act of growing food and turning land that otherwise might be vacant or could have a different use? How do we take that and build out more from that? And so, and how do we turn it into something that sustains and nourishes a community? And that's food. And so that's how it started. And that was the why. And then it moved into this other why, which is how do you truly transform community? How do you shift change? How do you shift power? Power. Those are questions too, as to who owns the land, who farms the land, who has access to the food, who has access to the education that we provide. And then it was all rooted in young people, because in order for us to change and shift power and move community forward, you have to bring forward this new group of leaders, which are young people.
Right, right. So that's all the big lofty things. But it's actually happening.
Yeah.
It's actually happening. So we're going to try to break it down generally here, and I'm going to simplify it a little bit. But I'd like to start with the STEM school integration part, because that's a part that I can start with too. Yeah. So STEM is a program to teach science and technology and engineering and math, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I didn't even prep. That was impressive. And I don't have children. I'm child-free by choice. Love it. But I can still care about kids.
Yeah.
And I definitely care about them learning and growing and all of those things. And STEM is a really interesting project. So this is a nonprofit.
This is a nonprofit.
And then you've partnered with the
public school system.
Right. So that alone is like a lot of hula hooping.
Mm-hmm. Always hula hooping. But I think that's also what's made it so successful, because I think when you work within institutions, and I think you can look at this across the entire like span of the history, right? Like how we work in institutions, and school systems are institutions essentially. So what's great is they have to adhere to certain things to make it work. And we can question those all day long, and we can disagree or agree with them, whatever it is, but it exists. Mm-hmm. Nonprofits, if we are partnering in really meaningful, thoughtful ways, can be that partner that can push a little more or can expand a little more. And if you build that trust with one another, which is what we have done with Birmingham City Schools, and it's not been easy, they would say the exact same thing, that we can push just enough to do what they also want to see, but maybe could not have done from just regulation standpoint or what have you. And that's important, I think. I think it's important that you build partners all around you, and they keep us in check. Like, same thing. You
right, because you're having to work within a pretty established framework.
That's right.
So let's just run through just a scenario. This new beautiful campus that includes a demonstration kitchen and a full commercial kitchen and storage and all kinds of places for children to, like, get wide-eyed and play with food, right?
Yep.
School group, let's say second graders, lands on this new campus just about to be ready. And they're going to do a STEM thing.
Yeah.
walk us through what that would look like.
Well, it depends on what subject we're doing. So I can give you some examples of something that are fun for me, because I think through this all the time. But so let's say we're learning about fractions, right? Mm-hmm. Like fractions can be hard. Math, by the way, for me, hard. Mm-hmm. Always has been hard, continues to be hard. I could have used these classes because I think I would have done better. So fractions, we build out a curriculum called Fraction Chili. So kids are able to go out into the field. We are cutting peppers and tomatoes. We bring them inside. We actually create a recipe, but we're using fractions as measurements, right?
3/4 of a cup.
That's right. And we're using that in our curriculum, but we're also building this recipe. And at the very end, we all get to eat chili. And I've always said, like, that would get me to really love fractions at the end of the day, just because I gravitate towards chili or any kind of food product. But that being said, like, so that's a way that we can do that. And mm-hmm. kids love it. And once you're able to see it with that vantage point.
And you go, because I mean, we both went through school, and so probably did everyone else. Like, when am I ever going to use this?
Right.
And you don't know. And so this is a really great application. So that's one thing.
Yep.
That's field trip day. That's fun. Mm-hmm. You also have like an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Like new farm stewards,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. And that really grew out of our connection at Woodlawn High School. So one thing that makes us a little different as an organization is we've really built out this model. We don't just plop school gardens into one school, right? We actually have built out our gardens in one neighborhood that starts at an elementary school, and those students have a teaching farm at their middle school, and then they have that teaching farm at their high school. So we are now seeing kids who have had this experience almost their entire school career. And that's intentional. It's like building out, what does it look like for a pre-K mm-hmm. through 12th grade experience to be connected to this way of learning.
And investing.
Yep, and investing.
In the children and investing in the community space, because these are community and city schools. These aren't public school vouchers being used somewhere else.
That's right. And it's also their neighborhood. And mm-hmm. so when you are building out a program that it not only affects young people that are actually going through it, but also giving back to their neighborhood, it's a completely different agency and ownership, right? Mm-hmm. And so it took us a minute to learn that. And the way we learned it was at the high school. So the high school, we started to see students coming out, asking questions, and we started to recruit and think, well, this is beyond like an after school program. We do that in our elementary, middle school. We'll have all these kids that are really invested in the program beyond the school day, mm-hmm. and they sign up for our farm clubs, and they are out there pest management. They are running the ponds. We have ponds with koi and everything else. I mean, like, they are in it, and they own it. Like, I would come out there and they'd be like, excuse me, that we're watering this right now. You need to move over to the left. You know, I'm like, sorry. So it becomes different.
You're like, I work here.
I was like, I'm so sorry. So sorry. But when we got to the high school, we knew that it's beyond a program at that point. If we really want to see community change, what is one of the biggest pieces of that? Employment. We have to increase the opportunities for meaningful jobs for young people, and especially in Birmingham. So how do we do that? Well, this is a great place to start the process. And so we started a high school apprenticeship program at Woodlawn High School. They started graduating. We were like, wait a second, what's happening? They're graduating. What do we do now? Well, we started a graduate apprenticeship program because a lot of those students wanted to keep going. They wanted to keep learning and understanding where a career path might take them if mm-hmm. they stayed with it. So now we have an up to 2-year graduate apprenticeship program. So now we really see ourselves as a food education and youth employment model, period. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not pre-K through 12 anymore. It's literally like pre-K through 14. Mm-hmm. And we're getting the benefits of that because now young people have the opportunity to help us grow the program, guide the program, and mentor the young people because they've been through the program themselves.
Yep. Right. Yeah. And 11 years. I mean, that's a class.
Yes.
That's all the way.
You know how to grow a tomato at that point. Yeah.
So the community side of this is an interesting part that I want to dig into for a minute. Because Jones Valley Teaching Farm campuses produce food.
We do.
You have an orchard yep. with peaches and pears and apples. You've got rotating seasonal crops at the different places. Mm-hmm. That food would go to waste if it was just being made into chili
right.
every so often, right?
Right, absolutely. So the food production that we do, and also just we have orchards at every one of our school sites too. So what you see at the downtown farm, I mean, you'll see it on school campuses. So it's normal to see blackberries growing constantly, mm-hmm. you know, during the season, or muscadines and mm-hmm. Scuppernongs, you know, growing and all of that. Like, it's part of school culture to go out real quick to the recess and grab a blackberry on the way there, right? Mm-hmm. And that's about shifting our entire culture around food and food access. So the produce that we grow used to be in a different way that we would get it out to folks. We used to set up student-run markets, and so students would sell it directly to their community. Mm-hmm. When COVID happened, and still happening, we had to shift because all of our students were no longer on school sites. But the students said, why don't we just give this away? Like, we know what's facing our community. We don't come here just to sell it. We come here to give back. We're growing this, and it's our labor that's doing that. Let's give it. So we started to just donate it. So now we use all of that food that we are producing, and we are donating it to some local organizations that are targeting communities around our school sites. And we open up farm stands right now, and it's all, you know, we give it away and we take donations. But right now it's what we can do. It makes us feel like we are solving a piece of a puzzle that's always existed, but it's forced us to dig a little bit deeper and ask bigger questions about how we utilize this food every day. We also use them in our programming. So right, kids will come out and, you know, we'll use it in all of our educational programming.
So I wrote a few years ago about school lunches for South Carolina schools that have programs, sure. And that's how I remember the word STEM.
Good.
Because I did something on vermicomposting and
we
something
do that too.
On,
look yeah. at you. I love it.
So there was just kept being a thing. And I kept asking the question just blatantly, you know, just naively, I think is the right word. Mm. What happens to the greens after they learn the science that they needed for that? Well, they just live there mm-hmm. on the campus until they get a seed. Or what happens to this whole acreage of mm-hmm. farm? Because Spartanburg had greenhouses and all of this, and they still do. They ended up having to figure out a third-party way to contract to sell the food because the parents on the school board, the parents in the school district, wanted their children to eat the food. But there was no way to actually, even though the cafeteria is over there. Mm-hmm. And so they had this centralized farm for the entire district. They had to sell the food to the tractor trailer and then contract it to drop it off. And they ended up figuring it out within the system. And that was a lot of frustration and a lot of work. You're here all the time. You're not the only director that has ever been, but you're in the next phase of expansion. How do you combat the weariness that comes with that kind of frustration of pushing up against this? Because I think we all experience this idea of overwhelm, and so we bounce and we don't do something that we probably could do, when in actuality, it's going to be frustrating, right? Mm-hmm. So as an organization that you're leading, can you talk about how you work to combat that?
Yeah.
From an institutional level?
Well, it's been a journey. So when I first started my career outside of this, so I used to work in policy and systems change. So that's all we talked about was how do we change wellness policies in school systems? How do we change farm to school kind of policies so that we can get more fresh food into cafeterias? How do we, all those questions. And I lived in this land of policy and systems change. And when I got to Jones Valley Teaching Farm, we're always asked that question, like, how do you get in the system? And you know, what I've come to, and this is just where I've landed. So remember when we were talking about earlier that an institution is an institution mm-hmm. that has all of these rules and red tape that they have to abide by. And then there's those nonprofit partners that can push. And I believe where I've landed is it would be ideal. And also just let's think about the fact that we could not pot the way that our schools are set up now. There's no way that Jones Valley Teaching Farm realistically could provide the amount of food that would be necessary for some of these larger schools that we're in. We have high schools that have 1,000 kids in it that right. you would have to have that supply. We don't have that as like a small urban farm. Mm-hmm. So really when you're talking about food distribution, food supply chain, all of that, we are working within a broken system in general. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So we have to acknowledge that, and we have to use young minds, in my opinion, and that's why we want them to see this larger picture of how hard it is to grow food, how hard it is to get it in your schools, that young people hopefully will have the answers next, because I don't think us adults are going to get there, right? Like I've decided, I think this is for somebody else's brain. But what I am okay with is the fact that every single day we provide a place for young people to walk through our farms and they can see it as a reality. Mm-hmm. We are an exposure piece. So we may not be supplying all of it, but we are supplying a huge piece of it and that young people see that it is possible. We are transforming.
Imagination.
Yes.
Is the thing.
Yes.
Imagination. Because you don't, when I'm trying to do something new, I don't know about you, but I always look because mm-hmm. I've taught myself to look for examples of other people that did it successfully.
That's right.
Take apart what I think I know of how their process was.
Right.
Try to learn a little bit more. They help build my imagination because they did it.
Yes.
They existed.
Yeah.
So that exposure is so vital.
So huge. And just the fact that it exists in a child's life. I mean, if we just said, okay, we can't get into the school cafeterias, peace out, like I'm done, I'm bouncing, you know, then we wouldn't have kids coming out there for their classes and experiencing a Hackeri turnip. We wouldn't have these taste tests during farm club where we're experimenting with brand new, like me, myself, learning how to eat a beet, you know, mm-hmm. like a for real beet, you know, and, you know, learning those things. And that to me is where we fit. And it's not perfect, but nothing is. And so what we have to do is exemplify and elevate what we are doing that does make a difference. And that exposure and that interaction with kids every day and changing the way a school culture sees food in its space beyond a cafeteria mm-hmm. is where we fit into that puzzle. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And I think knowing that there are flaws in everything and it is difficult in people and systems and stuff, but people create systems so they can change them.
That's
too.
Right.
Right. It's like we created this so we can change it. We yeah. just have to ask those questions. You weren't asking for this, but since it's my show, I'm going to share it. I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina, and James K. Polk, a forgettable president, birthplace was in a county over, and we went to the historical site, and I might have been in first or second grade, and we got to go into the kitchen house, and we had a time, we had a moment where we could cook a cherry popover on the hearth.
Wow.
With the stones and stuff.
That's intense.
And I think my mom was on the trip or somebody was there. They took a picture of me. I will never forget it.
Yeah.
I was in heaven.
That's incredible.
I remember the canned cherries because I'd never seen canned cherries. And we got to use the heat. You know, we got to do the coals and the yep. whole thing. Now, regulation, that wouldn't happen today. Can't get near that.
Not a hearth.
But I bet that that might be one of the first times I thought about cooking outside of my home and cooking as a history and like they did it this way kind of thing, because I can still think back on that
yep.
exposure. And here I am.
I love it.
Still sitting across from people talking about beets.
I love it.
And turnips.
Not cherries, though that cherry pie turnover sounds delicious.
I was a little too gooey.
Oh,
but
sorry.
I didn't care. I was just like, The other kids weren't interested. And I said, I'll do yours.
Yes.
Like, move immediately, I was like, let me go do this.
Because and that related to you, right?
Right.
And for other kids, it's digging in the dirt.
Right.
And for other kids, it's messing with drip irrigation and fixing irrigation pipes that break. Or for other kids, it's, you know, harvesting flowers and making bouquets on Fridays. Or it is selling to your community, mm-hmm. you know? So that's what's so cool, I think, about food is that there are so many outlets for young people and adults to find their feet, you know, like, what is it about this that draws me to this work? And what draws me is very different
right.
than my colleague that is at this job, you know, mm-hmm. doing this work, whether they're a farmer, an educator, whatever it is that brings you to it.
You're in policy, mm-hmm. change, systems. That's very heady stuff. That's very sitting around conference rooms, talking, reading regulations, focus groups, a lot of things like that. It is away from the air and the sunshine.
That's why I'm here right now.
And the discussion of
yeah.
farm. But how has being here changed you?
Yeah.
Because we're talking about how it's changing the community
yeah.
and the kids. There's no way you can't interact and not be changed yourself.
Yeah. Forever changed. So policy systems is where I started. Well, actually, magazine journalism is where I started. So I was magazine journalist.
We were buds. I knew we were buds.
I was a magazine journalism major. That was on my, like, diploma.
Nice.
And my dad, I remember, was like, so what's you going to do? You know, and I'm like, I'm going to work in a magazine. And this was before, you know, the World Wide Web really was, like, rearing its head. So I thought, you know, print journalism forever would be sailing into the...
We're getting a New York apartment with yeah. those built-in bookshelves. Yes. We know what it looks like in the 1960s with Norman Mailer
right.
sitting over here doing something and throwing cocktail parties.
Yes.
I'll write one piece a month for Life
yes.
magazine.
Yes.
I was right there with you.
So it was like I was sold, you know.
Yeah.
Which got me to Birmingham because I got an internship at Southern Living Magazine. So I was able to go back to my dad and be like, so I just got this paid gig at Southern Living. Then moved into policy systems change and then moved over to the food bank. So I've worked in, because I wanted to understand true, I got into like the food world from a very niche kind of standpoint. I can say that. Like my lens was very privileged and it was incredibly, well, this is neat. This is a cool way to look at life and like, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when I started to get into policy systems change, I realized that that lens was no longer appropriate because we were talking about, yeah, everybody deserves food, you know, and there's a lot of people in our community that aren't getting it. And so mm-hmm. this isn't a niche thing anymore. This is like an actual survival piece of our community and what it means to be nourished. And why are some people not being nourished by our community and mm-hmm. by each other, you know? And so it shifted me completely. I learned a lot through the systems and policy piece. I learned a lot about theory. I learned about like how it could work. I learned about why it doesn't work. But it wasn't until I got to Jones Valley that I have ever felt like I have found a place to dig as deep as I possibly can to actually changing the system. And that's by individuals working towards a common goal or
it
by
is
young
so
people.
So much more grassroots
yes.
than you ever imagined,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my lens has shifted so much because of that. And to make me look back even at some of the things that I used to see about this work and know that I was wrong in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And now I'm working to make some of that right, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's a constant journey within myself to continue to learn and to continue to hit that wall and go, nope, you got to relearn that, Amanda. And to open myself up to the criticism, rightfully so, and to the questions that people ask me because it should be asked, and to rise to the occasion to try to find the answers for them.
Yeah. She didn't plan that. She's just that good. She didn't know that was coming.
I did not.
But we're in a real new phase. The very, very edge of a huge new phase for this farm. What is making you hungry?
What is making me hungry? Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I'm really hungry right now.
Me too. And I shouldn't say that because I had like a lot of hot dogs.
I know. When you mentioned, I was like, oh my gosh. Sounds delicious.
Parts of 6 hot dogs.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. Okay. That was not mine. I had a lot of lettuce.
Yeah. Well, I need lettuce right now. Trade. Okay.
What's making me hungry right now? Oh, the possibilities of what can be. I mean, I'm serious. Like, the possibilities of young people running this work, of being at a center where there are people everywhere interested in running and learning and like knowing that things are possible and like seeing the beauty of being connected to the land in a way that I think we've all been so far removed from, and cooking together and sharing that, just like you said, that cherry popover experience with one another, mm-hmm. and experiencing it as a communal group, like as a place where we can look at each other and go, can you believe this tastes this good, you know, and celebrating that, mm-hmm. and but also working to make things better, mm-hmm. every day, like not getting lost completely in the fact of some of these heady pieces that are broken that we're trying to fix, or by the opportunities that are not available to some of the young people I work with. And instead kind of using this as a place to slam those doors open, mm-hmm. and to convince our community to come together around a shared experience and say, invest in this and invest in young people to make it better. And I think this place can do it. I really do. I believe it can do it.
What's one aspect of this job that meshes like a puzzle piece with an aspect of your personality?
People. That's why I got into magazine journalism, is because I loved this idea that you could meet regular, everyday, extraordinary people, yeah. right? Like regular, everyday, extraordinary people, mm-hmm. and you have the ability to tell their story. That is why I got into magazine journalism. And so it still drives me to understand why each person comes to this work, why each young person gravitates towards this work. And it's people-centered. It's just like, put me in that. And for other people, it's food-centered and nature-centered, and that's why they come. But for me, it's all about people.
Mm-hmm. Quick fire. One thing that keeps you up at night.
Money.
Yeah.
To keep this going. It's a lot of pressure. It's the biggest pressure I've ever felt in my life, because I'm responsible for a huge budget that I never thought I would ever be in charge of. But I believe in it so much that I can't not do it, you know, yeah. but it's very hard. Yeah. It's a lot of stress because we just ask for money. Like that's how we make this
non-profit.
Work.
Nonprofit.
Yeah. And so you just hope everybody's going to say yes.
Yeah. So I'm here. I've finally made it here. I'm so excited. It was worth the wait because I get to spend some time with you and think about these things. I brought a magic picnic basket, and with it, I can time travel. I can go back and conscript. I can nicely ask somebody to make something very specific for you. I can source a little bit, or I can source a lot, and I can cook a little bit. I would love to bring you some of your favorite things, just things that pop into your head. They don't have to go together. And you know, this changes. This isn't a one thing.
Yeah.
You know, the picnic basket will mm-hmm. come again. So what can I bring you?
Boiled peanuts.
Boiled peanuts. Nice. Spicy or regular?
Both.
Okay. Good. What else?
Cheese dip.
All right. We have to elaborate because I eat a lot of cheese and cheese dip.
Queso, white cheese dip, whatever you call it, cheese dip.
Okay.
It's my jam. I'm known for my love of that. I'd love, and I know I work at a farm, and I know that I should be like saying, you know, but I've got all that here. So if you're really going to go to a picnic.
I'm doing it.
If you're like going someplace.
I'm getting you queso.
I'm going to just dip like a carrot in it. But I just want everybody to know that like I'm fully committed to what I grow here too. And I don't grow it. My colleagues grow. I would love a big baguette with butter mm-hmm. to spread on it. Mm-hmm. Maybe a piece of cold fried chicken with extra crispy crust.
Did you have a favorite place where that fried chicken comes from?
No.
It's just fried chicken. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not yet. No, there's no, because it's all different. It depends on what my mood is. Sometimes mm-hmm. I want it extra crispy. Sometimes I want it the old, like, sauteed style kind of deal. I mean, salty, mm-hmm. buttermilk preferred. Dredged in buttermilk, you know, soaked in buttermilk. Am I done? Do I keep going?
Well, if you want,
I'm not a sweet person, so okay. You don't have to bring me any sweets.
Well, that's so great.
It is just salty. Tom's vinegar and salt potato chips.
Mm-hmm. And then beverage?
Beverage is going to be, beverage will probably be some wine, maybe a cold beer. That's it.
That sounds pretty good. Well, if people want to learn more about Amanda and Jones Valley Teaching Farm and why it's been on my radar for so long and why it's only going to get better, you can go to thesouthernfork.com. As usual, I will have links there so you can pop over to learn more and see all the initiatives, see the pictures and people in action. If you like what you hear, I am very happy that you do. And I say often that I am so happy to be doing this work, but I am so happy that you are on the other side of this mic listening so that we can share this time together too, even if I don't know you. So please dig into the archives and learn more. There's lots more urban farms where this came from in in the archives. So for now, I'm going to say goodbye to Amanda and thank you so much for letting me come on such a crazy week as everything is coming together at this farm.
It's exciting. You just put a great end to it. So thank you for being here.
Yeah.
Hello and welcome to Talking With My Mouthful. If you've listened even to a few episodes of this podcast throughout the years, then you know I really focus on local and not only local sourcing, but really telling local stories and trying to highlight organizations such as Jones Valley Teaching Farm that have local impact. That's for a very simple reason. I think grassroots organization gets things done. Doesn't mean that national organizations cannot, but it is easier in times of crisis to start from the roots. And so I'd like to just share with you three places that if you're interested in helping the victims of Hurricane Ida recover, especially those south of New Orleans, these are three organizations that I have had personal interaction with that are really great for mobilization. The first one is Operation Barbecue Relief. I did a podcast on that when a hurricane flooded eastern North Carolina and they mobilized. The second one is Southern Smoke Texas, and that is an organization started by Chris Shepherd and his Underbelly Restaurant Group, and they have large access to funds to really help mobilize movement. And then, of course, the most high profile of the three is going to be World Central Kitchen, which is WC Kitchen, and that's Jose Andres, his organization. All three of those organizations are on the ground and available to help with Hurricane Ida right now. I have heard from my New Orleans contacts that the coverage is not doing the damage justice, and that people have no water, much less no electricity, and we're really going into the weekend where almost 6 or 7 days of this. So sometimes it's just easier to look around where you are, and that's exactly what these organizations have done. Operation Barbecue Relief is run by barbecue guys and uses chef volunteers. WC Kitchen raises money and uses culinary volunteers. And Southern Smoke raises money through culinary events and is able to mobilize that in a variety of ways. So anyway, thank you so much for listening today. And as usual, until next time.
You've been listening to The Southern Fork. I can't wait to bring you more culinary conversations, but in the meantime, I have one question. Are you going to eat all that?